All right, so let's open up the discussion to the public. Gonna tell them you can give us a call at 434-1790, 434-1790. You can give us a call on the line, or you can send your WhatsApps to 266-4862. That's 266-IVOB. Now, while we get that together, there's some things I was looking at online. I see Ghana went over to this new ID card. We are going to the new ID card. There's some concerns here. There are obviously some people on both sides of the discussion. I was reading some of the articles and the comments. People are saying, hallelujah, we're moving from this laminated card to something more advanced. And then there are some people that are questioning the whole idea of the type of information that being asked for, the biometrics and different things like that. So where that is concerned, I want to have some discussion on that before we bring in the calls. I want to have a broad discussion so when people call, they can ask you specific questions. Of course, Sherianne, I want to hear the legal implications of this, because people talk about the Constitution, people talk your constitutional rights, stuff like that. So of course, we want to have a discussion on something like the new ID card. How safe is it? What rights do we have? Is it a good idea, bad idea? Needs tweaking in a particular area? I would like to hear from you guys on this.
Okay, I'll take that first, Corey. Well, I think that generally we can all agree that our ID cards do need updating. So I don't think, well, I haven't seen any argument there. Our cards do need updating. And this administration, I believe, has been very vocal about its intention to push the country forward towards becoming more of a digital society. So with that, here we're presented now with the new identity management bill, which I understand has recently been passed, but it hasn't been proclaimed as yet. But I do see some concerns with the act, certainly in terms of voluntarily providing the information. And in some regard, the act suggests that providing our data for the purposes of this ID, digital ID, will be mandatory. Where the biometric data is concerned, that is fingerprints. The act has been explicit in saying that any submission of those fingerprints will be voluntary. So you do see some consideration from the government is saying, okay, look, in regards of your biometric data, you have a choice. And I noticed as well from reading the act, not only is the act saying that you have a choice, but the government has also put some means to protect itself in saying, okay, when you opt to provide your fingerprints, your biometric data, you have to sign a declaration saying that you are agreeing to provide this information. So there's evidence there on the government's end that, hey, look, you have consented to providing this biometric data.
Right. Anyone else have any concerns or so on? I want to read a couple of messages. I want to go to the telephone lines, but I want to get some commentary from the panel in terms of the idea of this new ID card.
I agree, Sharon, as well, too, in terms of declaring intent of the government to respect the biometric data in terms of fingerprinting as being something to be optional and not mandatory. I think overall, the act itself does have adequate provisions for providing consent for this as a basis. One of my biggest concerns, though, is that the act does make reference to the Data Privacy Act, which itself is not yet proclaimed. So you're passing the digital legislation on something else that needs to be passed first and also proclaimed first as a basis. Therefore, you're basically providing this act as no real leg to stand on legally as a basis to say it must be enforced, or to say that the actual privacy and data protection requirements of the Management Act itself is actually adequate for privacy. So that's my biggest concern. My other concern is that in terms of what the overall intent of the government is, and both in the short term and long term for this ID system is not clear. We've not been sold on this system to say, this is the intent of the government, this is how it's going to benefit you, exactly what kind of information or systems you'll be linked to. And that's crucial to this entire process. We need to be sold in terms of being told exactly what's going to be done with our data once it's provided to the government. It's now in a digital format, so it's difficult to get back once it's lost or being compromised in some way. And that's critical to this entire thing. I think we've been given just tidbits of information that we need a lot more. And it's important for persons within Barbados to understand exactly how the information will be used, shared, replicated, and in any way manipulated as part of this process too.
Okay, good, excellent, thank you.
I would say that Sherianne said, we have to move away from the laminated cards because that in itself is also a risk, because anybody can laminate a card and try to do something that is nefarious. But in terms of the identification card, which can be linked and allow for the country to move forward in so many different regards in terms of commerce and e-commerce and stuff like that, I totally agree with Dwight. We need to understand, and of course the government wouldn't be able to probably divulge everything, but we have to have some high level understanding as to, you know, what the biometrics, even though they're opt-out, what is going to happen, because a data breach can be extremely, extremely, extremely cost from a financial perspective. It costs a lot of money, and once it's out there, it's out there. And IBM did a study, and they said once you find a breach, it's probably it took place about 280 days before, right? I mean, we saw Marriott, they had two data breaches that pretty much tarnished their brand reputation. Back in 2014 and into 2018, and then in 2020, they had 24 million records, compromised. And we're a small population. What will happen, and how is that information being secured? Microsoft, the government in the United States was also breached, and that was through Microsoft email. So we need to understand how these things are going to be implemented. The planning and the architecture has to be extremely sound, and lots of redundancy. And the highest level of security has to be in place, because we're a small island nation. We don't want to have that type of tarnish on our reputation as it pertains to tourism, as it pertains to medical. So we would like to get a little bit more information, but we definitely do need to move away from the lamination and have a central nervous system that can help businesses improve and create products that can help our country improve. And as a developer, that's the things that I'm looking at. Because you can build an e-commerce solution in a short space of time, but in Barbados it's extremely difficult because there's no facility for me to do it. So clients come to me and they say, hey, we want you to build an e-commerce. And I said, I can't help you because we can't integrate. We have Stripe, we have all these solutions in America that takes 15 minutes for my developers to integrate, but in Barbados we don't have that. So stuff like a central nervous system where we can feed off of an API would really help in terms of moving the country forward, but I can't speak to what the government is planning because I'm not privy to those conversations. We just want to make sure that the information is safe in all the different categories that I would have mentioned earlier.
All right, excellent. I want to pick up from the discussion that's going on online, and Andrew, we're going to come to you. I want to go over to the phone line and come back, and we're going to run all over the place. But before we do so, the first question I see on here is, why isn't someone from the Ministry of Innovation Smart Technology on? And I should have said this from the upfront and the outset. What we're doing is a series of discussions. I wanted to bring in the panel to do two things. One, to speak to us and walk us through and let us look at the terminology and all that stuff, very broad discussion. And also the concern, and I heard this with Mr. Ellis and a caller on Friday, he was saying, you know, you bring in the ministry officials, the government officials first. Sometimes what they try to do is protect their political hide, so therefore you don't always get the full story. What this discussion allows us to do is to be able to put the questions to them in a more sensible way when we do get them on the panel. So one of the questions I would have for them and the public would have for them is, who's going to monitor the information? What is the information for? What are you going to do with the information, like Dwight asked? So then we are more informed to be able to answer questions that they may have and ask them questions that we may have. So I think that having this discussion first was the best way to do it, and that's the reason why. So we take a call. We got 23 minutes before noon. We take our first call. Good morning and welcome. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning, Corey.
Hi, good morning. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning. And to the panels also, I'm asking about the ID card for him. My husband, he was married here for 5 years to me, and he's a Guyanese, right? On the ID card he have, it have on a Barbados background, but nationality Guyanese. But when the changes ID card here now, so what he will be getting? If he still get his ID card, non-national Guyanese, or if he will get a better ID?
For me, I don't feel it's fair to put that question to the panel. Like I said, we're going to have somebody from the Ministry of Innovation, and that may be more a question for persons who deal with like immigration matters and so on. What we want to actually do is look at the data protection, the privacy part of it, those types of things first. So if that's your only question, we're going to move on. All right, thank you. Let me take another call here quick. Or no, actually, let's go back. Andrew, you wanted to say something. A lot of comments here on our chat. People saying, like, they're not pull out that ID card outside of Barbados. They use their driver's license or their passport. And I actually reminded me of something. I remember listening to Market Van years ago, and he talked about the license we had. You know, that red book. I don't know, y'all remember that red book you used to get, and it got all the things stapled on, and you pull it out, and it was very embarrassing. So I think it's time to really move into the 21st century. But as we do so, and justifiably so, these questions need to be asked and answered. So Andrew, let's go to you. You wanted to say something.
Yes. I see a lot of focus being made on what is the data going to be used for, but we also need to make sure that a key question that we have put forward when the system is introduced. So yes, I agree we need to go to a digital ID card, but we need to ensure that the data is protected and audited by some third party for at the capture of the data at the beginning, where the data is actually stored after it's captured. There may be a copy on the card or on a system. Then what is the secure measures in place for keeping that data available so it doesn't get lost or changed? And then what happens when the data expires? Those are all questions that we need to ask. In addition to what are you going to do with my data? We have to ensure that the right access is in place at all times. And there are many stages that this data actually lives throughout the cycle.
One of the follow-up on Andrew, one of the big parts of data breaches are people who have access to the information, whether they have weak passwords or whether they're doing something malicious. So you really have to, and that's and pretty much most of the breaches, when you read the case studies, that's where it came from. Somebody logged in the wrong place in a coffee shop or something like that, and the information is leaked through, and hackers, they sit down and they think of every possible way to breach the system. So it's not only just data breaches from hackers, whether it's a virus, a Trojan, malware, but it's also sometimes insider persons who have different levels of access to access the information. So how is that system architected in such a way that it protects our data? So if you don't have to see something, you shouldn't have access to see it. So literally zero tolerance on user permissions and user rights.
Correct.
I agree with Andrew's comments as well too. At ISSA, we've actually reached out to the team behind the ID system, and we asked for an audience with them in terms of discussing the issues on security and privacy as well too. So these are questions that we are ready to ask in the absence of any information from the government and from the team itself. So once we get the opportunity, we actually would put this information back to the public so that any concerns regarding privacy and security could be made available to the public as well too, because we too have the same questions about exactly what standards, any benchmark is being used for the system, ensure that it's being properly secured as necessary, as mentioned in the Data Privacy Act, and also in terms of from the privacy perspective, exactly what is being put in place for protecting data in all stages of the life cycle from being collection into deletion as necessary. I think a big part of what's missing overall here is the transparency, more or less to say, in terms of how exactly what's being done and what the intent of the government is. If a benchmark or some kind of basis for the system is being used, or model, so to say, is this model one that's properly sound? And also, if you're following a model, are you following all the details of the model as necessary in terms of ensuring the information has been collected and managed and secured is done according to this adequate system and not just a piecemeal system that grabs the best pieces that will be visible to the public and looks good in the media and not necessarily all of the background stuff that is hard and necessary to protect the information.
I would like to take another call. Brass Stats.
Good morning.
Yeah, go. Sorry, Brass, I haven't heard from you. Good morning. Go ahead.
One very important thing to also ask is, what about me is being captured as part of this digitization and data? Because a lot of what you're trying to capture or get from a person to an extent tells me what it's going to be used for. So that is also something very important. What exactly is the government trying to store or know about you? And how much control do you have in terms of letting them have that or dictating what about me they can know about?
Well, there is some mention in the act itself about how information is being collected and also being disposed of. So it does mention that in terms of when data is being collected about someone from the ID for the ID system, it's being done based on the Data Protection Act itself, and in particular mentions the right to consent in terms of ensuring that proper consent is being given every time information being passed to someone that uses your ID data itself. It also mentions that there must be a right to erasure. And this also reference to the Data Protection Act again, in terms of saying if information is being provided to someone, they must have some way within which their data could be erased after the transaction or whatever interaction have with that person or entity is complete. And these are two basic elements that are necessary for any basic data protection processes. For any system, regardless.
Right. I have a list of the things they were asking in the first draft, and I'll probably read that out if necessary during the program. But a lot of messages building and so on. So I just let's move along. I have some big questions here, both on the chat and the WhatsApp for a number of you guys. I want you to think about it. The question is, what's the problem with giving your fingerprint when you all go to the good old USA? You have to give all 10 fingers, man. So people want to know, what is the big problem with giving your fingerprints and so on? But we're going to come back to that. Let's take a call. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Corey. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
To you and the panel. My question is, please. Why would Google the email address keep asking for your credentials? When you look at the phone, it's saying it has your email address there, but it's saying asking you to enter your credentials. Could the panel explain that?
Yes, please. Hold on, I'll let someone take that one. The request for credentials, panel, why is she getting the request? Sometimes I see this two-step verification. Come in, Andrew.
Well, it depends at what point you've been asked for credentials, because what you're probably seeing that the browser knows your email, but the browser probably don't know your password. So that could be one part of it. It could also be that Google wants to make sure that you are the holder of the account. So they may want additional information outside of just email, like something else to verify your identity. Or it could be an additional authentication method that they're trying to put in place. Another big word, multi-factor or two-factor authentication, where they want to have you log in more than one way. So it's all about at what point are you being asked for credentials, and those are the different scenarios I could think of.
Is that good, call?
Hello? I'm back on. That is my question that they're answering now.
Yes. I'm asking if, don't listen to the radio, don't listen to the radio, listen to the phone. Listen to the phone. Right.
So
you got your question answered?
But right. They were answering it just now, but I could not reply because I had gotten cut off. Okay.
Okay, no problem. So reply.
Okay. I can reply now?
Yes, please.
Hello?
Yes, you can reply now.
The reason I am asking is because the email address comes up and it's saying to enter your credentials. But I understand what they said just now, that if that they may need extra information or whatnot. But if I go, that is on the phone, I'm saying that. If I go on the computer, I can access by putting in my email address and my password.
So what is happening is everybody accesses the internet through an IP address. And if Google recognizes or feels as though that the IP address is not what you usually use, they tend to ask you for, as Andrew said, an additional step, which you have to put back in your password. And that's also a mechanism to stop people from hacking into your account. So it's a protection mechanism to protect you. It might be a little bit, another step might be a nuisance sometimes, but it's really to help protect you from people hacking into your account.
Okay, so I can just disregard it because I am not really someone that would be on the computer every day or using the on the phone. I'd just use the WhatsApp and take a call. So I wouldn't distress myself about it. Thank you.
All right, no problem. Thank you very much. Let me get to some of these messages before they get out of control and I can keep up with them. So the question to you, when we're talking about Google and WhatsApp and so on, this question asks, who monitors and ensures everything is well with the information? Is Big Brother really watching us? And who is Big Brother? And every panelist smiles. Who's going to take that one? who monitors the information? Who makes sure that everything is, you know, okay? Dwight, you like Dwight, come in, Dwight.
No, I was going to give Sharon first, but I'll say Big Brother is everywhere, and that's the reality here. Once you have any system that you use for free or any platform itself, there is some monitoring. The reality is that companies like Google, Facebook, and the others, they have both regulations in the home country where they operate, and they also have regulations in other countries as well, too. So it's a bit of Big Brother in everywhere overall in terms of the actual existence. And that's number one. I think it is important to remember that in a digital world, information is being sent all over the place. And the reality is that everyone wants a bit of that information itself. They want to see exactly what you do, and they want to actually target you with information in terms of marketing based on your actual behavior, based on your browsing patterns, based on what who you message on a regular basis. All this has value in terms of insight, so they could target you with advertising and also make money in return. So Big Brother is everywhere. Big Brother exists on the local government level. It exists at the at your telecom company level, being Flow and Digicel. It exists at the Barbados government level to some degree, I assume, and also internationally in terms of other entities and websites you access. So it's a bit of everywhere. And you really can't escape it. The best you could do is minimize your data surface in terms of who gets access to your data, what systems you use, and ensure that those persons or businesses or websites all do the right things and follow adequate regulations. The good thing is that we've had GDPR and other regulations within recent years that have really helped make sure that companies like Google and others are being held accountable. And they've had faced lawsuits within recent years and in the past as well too. So they've been pulled up in terms of, sure, they've had new systems and new technology that they've rolled out for the sake of humanity, as they claim. But the reality is that they've made a lot of money from information about us, and they've done what they wanted so far. So now it's time to pull back in the rein and say, no, you can't have this much unbridled access to my information. It must be monitored. It must be adequately provided with consent. And once the interaction is over, you must get rid of that information and not just have it into infinity. I think it's good to see that Facebook and the others also be facing lawsuits too, because they've made, as Mark Zuckerberg said, mistakes in terms of how they use technology and push it on look too far in terms of what they've done with your data, what they've collected, and all without adequate consent and notice. And that's what Big Brother has been so far in the past couple of years, and also thankfully to regulation, that's been pulled back. And that's why having this regulation like we have right now is important to ensure that information being used properly and in the right way. And in that sense, I said the Data Privacy Act and not necessarily the ID System Act.